13 onwards, in the fifth chapter, we have been seeing the description of the three doers, kartas. In text number 13, Lord Krishna explained by using the analogy of the city of nine gates, the human body, the deha and the dehi, the soul that resides in the body. And he described that the living being who lives within the body, understanding that the Atma or the real self actually does nothing, but the body is simply interacting with its objects of the senses. So the soul is not the doer. So what is the doer? Then that was discussed in text 14, where Lord Krishna describes that actually the soul neither acts nor causes anyone to act. Na kartritvam na karmani lokasya srijati prabhuho. Nor he causes any activity to be done. Na karma phala sanyogam. And he has nothing to do actually with the fruits of the reactions, of the actions. And he only acts according to his svabhava, his nature that has been acquired by contact with the three modes of material nature, sattva-guna, raja-guna and tamaguna. And then we saw the modes of nature thus is the second doer. Because the Atma doesn't do it, material nature does it. We saw this all-important word, svabhava, svabhava. Sometimes the three modes of material nature are also called bhava. So, according to the influence of these bhavas or the gunas upon the living being, one's behavior, attitudes, thoughts change accordingly. And one becomes a creature of conditioning or habit. Now, can somebody turn this? We will revise what we discussed last time. We will briefly revise it. Remember this chart? So we saw that the beginning is avidya, the end is suffering. And what is in between avidya and suffering? Pap. So because of avidya, we perform pap or sin. And because of sin, we ultimately suffer in this world. But in between also there are many stages which we saw, that from avidya comes the desire to sin, which is called bijam. It is a seed of sin, the bij or the seed of sin. From that actually sprouts the sin or the sinful activity. That's called papam. And by performing papam, first the reaction manifests in a subtle form, sukshma, and that is called aprarabdha. So the reaction to our sin in its subtle form is called aprarabdha. The aprarabdha or the subtle form of our sinful reaction branches into two parts. It splits up. It gives two reactions. The first reaction is it gives the gross form of the sinful reaction. That means that the reaction to the sin was earlier subtle, now it becomes gross. It actually becomes experienced as suffering. And that is called prarabdha. Prarabdha karma is all the suffering that we are undergoing now in this present life. Our body that we have attained, our happiness and distress in this life, the kind of family we have, the kind of friends and enemies we have, is all determined by this prarabdha. So prarabdha causes our suffering. The second reaction that is caused by the aprarabdha or the subtle sinful reaction is that it creates an impression on the chitta or the consciousness. And that impression or sanskar is called kutam. And that impression or sanskar is nothing but the tendency to further commit that very same sin again, which caused that aprarabdha in the first place. So that tendency remains in the heart. And because of that kutam, that sinful disposition or the tendency to commit sin, again that sinful desire comes up in the heart. And then again he performs pap. Let us give a small example to illustrate this with a little story. Once upon a time, there was a thief. You may have heard this story earlier. And he decided one day that he should reform, that he should become a good man now. So what place is the best place? He decided, let me go to temple and let me attend the satsangs. So he started going to the temple and he was feeling nice, and somehow he was feeling that he is becoming a good man. Then all the devotees decided to go on Tirth Yatra. So our friend also decided to go. And when they reached their destination, they were staying one night in a dharamshala. All were sleeping in the same room. It was a very big room. And all were lying down on their respective mats and the luggage was next to them. Now, although this man had come to satsang, but his old habits had not died away completely. Because prarabdha, it takes a long time to go. So this disposition, kutam, because of repeatedly stealing, performing that papam again and again and again, this kutam, this sinful disposition, or the tendency to steal, had become very strong. The impression in his chitta had become practically uncontrollable. So even though he was reforming in the association of bhaktas, but still, that tendency, that kutam was still there. So the thought came in his mind, let me steal these bags. That means it became bijam now. Because of earlier papam, because of earlier so many times stealing, he had developed this kutam, this sinful, this desire or this tendency to steal. Almost unknown, it is there in the heart. And when the situation presents itself, then it manifests into a specific desire to commit that sin or to steal in this case. So he decided, now I must steal these bags. But then on the other side, he had also got some good kutam from all his association of the bhaktas. So that made him feel very guilty. No. At least I should not steal from the bhaktas. Devotees, I have come to holy place. At least here in the holy place, I shouldn't steal. So he controlled himself. But the kutam was too powerful. The tendency because of past sin, too strong. So he decided, okay, let me satisfy my tendency, but I will not steal. So what did he do? He took, as all the people were sleeping, he took one bag from here, kept it with that other person, took his bag, kept it with a third person, and he mixed all the bags. So in the morning, everybody woke up, and they opened the light. This is not my bag. What happened? My bag. Oh, it's there. So they all started fighting with each other. Why, you took my bag, he took my bag, he took your bag. And there was chaos. Finally, the thief stood up and said, my dear friends, please don't quarrel. I want to make a confession that I am the culprit. Actually, I am a thief. I have come here to reform. And some reformation has taken place. But somehow my tendency to steal is so strong that I could not control my fingers. But then I thought I am in a holy place. So I just settled at exchanging the luggage and not stealing. So at least I lifted something and kept here and kept there. So this is how papam leads to kutam and then bijam. So when that tendency manifests in a specific way, it is called bijam. That tendency may not even be known to that person. There are many people who have a tendency to a particular sin and they don't even know about it. They have done earlier. And only in the right situation, somehow when the situation is favorable for performing that sin, then it comes up, it manifests as a bijam. So also, so many millions of lifetimes we have spent in this material world, we have performed many pious activities and we have also performed many sinful activities. So the results of those sins, we don't know. How much a prarabdha karma is there in our chitta, in our consciousness? And how much of kutam, how much, what kinds of sinful disposition is there in our heart? And sometimes it just comes up. So in this way, the three modes of material nature, they completely control the living entity. And he moves around in the cycle of birth and death. So the Atma, the doer or the non-doer, understands that it is the modes of nature that do. At the same time, the modes of nature are not independent. Who controls the modes of nature? God Himself, Lord Krishna. So He is the third doer, the ultimate doer. It is only with His sanction that material nature acts. And material nature is the doer as far as the soul is concerned. The soul is not the doer. So last time we discussed that if the soul is not the doer, then why are we punished for our actions? Why is the soul responsible for his actions if the soul is not the doer? What is the answer? Desire. Because of desire. Because it is the desire of the soul that actually makes the action happen. The soul desires. Lord Krishna in the heart as Paramatma, He sanctions. Upadrashta anumantacha bharta bhokta maheshwaraha paramatma iti chapyuktyo dehesmin purushah paraha. He is a transcendental enjoyer seated in the heart, the Lord and Master. He is the overseer, upadrashta. He is a sanctioner, anumanta. He gives the anumati or the permission, the sanction to perform a certain activity. He fulfills the desire. Suppose I want to lift my finger. I am not independent to lift my finger. I have no independence. I have no capability to lift my finger. All I can do is desire. I desire to lift the finger. Krishna is in my heart. He says, okay, sanction. And then his material energy is there. Gives the instruction. Yes, now you may. Your brain sends signal to the muscle. Muscle, you may contract and you may lift. Now, it happens in a fraction of a moment, so we don't even think about it. But if you think a little deeply, then you will see behind the scenes what is going on. So every little action that we do in our life, every time we move our eyelids, every time we breathe, every little thing in our body that we do has to be first sanctioned by the Super Soul. If it is not sanctioned, then we cannot do it. So suppose somebody has paralysis because of his karma. He wants to move his hand, but Super Soul says, sorry, by your karma, you are supposed to get this disease of paralysis and I cannot fulfill your desire. So material energy, you will not move. You will not move the hand. The muscles will remain limp. So the jiva desires. Krishna in the heart as Super Soul or Paramatma sanctions or fulfills the desire according to what the jiva deserves. It is not simply desire, deserve also. The jiva must deserve. And what is the meaning of deserve? By karma. That means we must have performed that kind of karma to deserve that fulfillment of that desire. And finally, material nature acts. So therefore, because it is ultimately the desire of the soul that makes everything happen, the soul also has a responsibility. And therefore the soul is punished for the actions that it does, or the body is punished, and the body is also rewarded for all the pious activities that are done. So to summarize, the soul desires, therefore it is also called a doer, although actually it is not a doer physically. Krishna, who is the ultimate doer, he sanctions according to what the jiva deserves, and material nature implements or executes. So in that sense, all three are doers. So having explained this, in the third verse also, Lord Krishna, text 15, Lord Krishna has explained how actually he is only the sanctioner. He is not responsible for the actions. So someone may say, if Krishna is the doer ultimately, then let him take the reaction to my sin. So Krishna says, no, I have nothing to do with your sin. I have nothing to do with your punya also. You are doing everything. I have no connection with that. In this way, Krishna has established the concept of the three doers. Now we come to text 16. So kindly repeat after me. Jnanena tu tadajnanam yesham nashitam atmanah tesham aditya vajnanam prakashayati tatparam. By Srila Prabhupada, when, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. In the earlier verse, Lord Krishna had explained, Ajnaninavritam jnanam tena muhyanti jantavaha. He said, because of ajnana, this ignorance, the living entity is bewildered. It covers his real knowledge. And to continue then, in the this verse, Lord Krishna says, however, when real knowledge comes, then what happens? In this verse, we find a beautiful description of liberation. Liberation from bondage, liberation from the cycle of birth and death. The example is given of the sun, the night and the daytime. When it is night, everything is pitch dark and we cannot see properly. But with a faint rising, with the faint rays of the sun, as the sun begins to rise, then everything becomes very clear. The visibility becomes normal and all fear goes away. In the darkness, there is so much fear. Maybe there is a ditch, I may fall into a ditch. Or maybe there is a ghost around the corner. So there are so many fears in darkness. But when the light comes, with the rising of the sun, then everything is normal. We have no fear because there is full knowledge. So when true spiritual knowledge comes, then we become fearless. We become happy. We become free from anxiety, material anxiety. Material knowledge is like a little torch. What can you do with a little torch in the darkness? Can you light up the whole night? You cannot. You can only see a small portion of the night with a torch. But the sun, with the light of the sun, the whole world, the whole universe is lit up. So spiritual knowledge is like the sun. And material knowledge is like that small 1.5 volt battery torch. Another example, material knowledge is like the firefly, jugnu. You have seen firefly? At night time it flies, it's an insect which has a luminous body. It shines brightly with some light. For those who have not seen the sunshine, then the jugnu or the firefly is very attractive. Oh, so much light. But when the sunshine comes, then what is the power of the firefly? Nothing. So material knowledge, what can it reveal? What can it give us? Material knowledge, if you really analyze it, including the modern so-called knowledge of science, etc., is basically based on speculation. It may be this, it may be that, perhaps it is like this. This is my theory. Tomorrow the theory changes. Every day the theories are changing. There is no permanency at all. So it is like a fog. When there is a fog or a mist, you can't see clearly. So in the process, in the name of advancement of knowledge, we see that material knowledge leads us into more and more bewilderment, not into increase of knowledge. Knowledge should increase happiness. Knowledge should bring peace. But what is material knowledge bringing? Disturbance. It is bringing war, terrorism, crime, so many calamities. So this is a very simple example. Phalena parichiyate. One judges something by the results. What are the results of material knowledge that our world has achieved today? And what are the results of true spiritual knowledge? So the knowledge that is referred to here, jnanam, is not material knowledge that we are taught in the schools and colleges. This refers to the king of all knowledge. Raj vidya raj guhyam pavitram idam uttamam pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukham kartum avyayam. It is this avyaya, imperishable knowledge, which never changes. Material knowledge always changes. There are so many departments of material knowledge. When Prabhupada was discussing with one professor, he asked him, in all universities in the world, there are departments of science, engineering, accountancy, medicine, but where is the department that teaches the science of the soul, of the Atma? He says, this is the most important department, but it is missed out by all our schools and colleges. Nobody teaches about the Atma, the science of self-realization, in the schools and colleges. Prabhupada went on to explain that yes, all this physics, chemistry, mathematics, it may be important, but even among the different bodies of knowledge, there is relative importance. It is most important to understand oneself. Therefore, it is called the king of knowledge, Raj Vidya. So the knowledge of the soul, the knowledge of God, is the most important knowledge in all other bodies of knowledge. So the professor asked, why is knowledge of the self more important than other knowledge? He says, because everything begins with knowledge of yourself. You first understand yourself, then you can understand other things. And if you understand yourself, then you will understand the whole world. You will be able to understand God. In this way, Prabhupada explained how the world is in a problem today because the most important department of knowledge, the spiritual department, is lacking. And what is this perfect knowledge? Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudevah sarvamiti sa mahatma sudur labhaha. After many, many lifetimes of cultivating spiritual knowledge, the ultimate conclusion of that is Vasudevah Sarvam Iti, that Lord Krishna is everything and I must take shelter of Him. Such a person who takes shelter of Lord Krishna is called a Mahatma, Mahan Atma, Mahat, a great soul. And it is rare to find a great soul like this, a Mahatma. So here Lord Krishna is describing the purpose of obtaining pure spiritual knowledge. And we can all see that before we came to Krishna consciousness, what were we? What were our thoughts? What were our attitudes? What was our opinion about religion? What was our opinion about God? What was our goal of life? Wasn't there total confusion in our life about all these things? Wasn't there total bewilderment? Were we not confused about what life is all about and why we are supposed to live life? But when we get knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna consciousness, then everything becomes lighted up. Everything becomes clear. All the cobwebs in the mind get cleared. Yes, the goal of life is clear. This is religion, true religion, that is false religion. This is God and these are false gods. This is the true activity that must be done in life, and these activities are a waste of time. Everything becomes clear. It is not whimsical. Crystal clear, as they say. And therefore we experience that after becoming devotees, we actually see how our life was in darkness earlier, and we didn't know clearly what was what. And now the sun of Lord Krishna is beginning to shine in our life, and everything is so clear. So who is the cause of our suffering? Is Lord Krishna the cause of our suffering? No. It is avidya, ignorance. Who is the cause of our happiness and liberation? Is Lord Krishna the cause? No. It is vidya, or knowledge. So therefore, we must cultivate this vidya, as a result of which one can become liberated from this bondage and go back to the spiritual world. So Lord Krishna continues in the next verse of the process of how the person who acquires real knowledge proceeds back to the spiritual world. So text 17.
Tadbuddhayastadatmanas tannishthastatparayanah gacchantya punaravrittim yana nirdhuta kalmashah.
One's intelligence, mind, faith and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge, and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. Kindly repeat. Tat buddhayah, tat atmanah, tan nishthah, tat parayanah. Tat here refers to the Lord, Lord Krishna. When one is fixed, when one's intelligence is fixed in the Lord, when one's mind is fixed in the Lord, when one's faith is fixed in the Lord, when one's refuge is fixed in the Lord, then what happens? Gacchanti, such a person goes somewhere. Where does he go? Apunar avrittim. Avritti means to be born again, rebirth. Apunar means not again. Punar means again. So apunar avrittim means not be born again. So he goes to that place from where, having gone, he will never be born again. He will never return to this material world, which is a place of suffering, a place of death. Jnana nirdhuta kalmashaha. And because of this jnana, nirdhuta, he has destroyed kalmashaha. Kalmasha means dirt. But in this context, it means the reactions of our sins. So by his knowledge, all the reactions of his sins have gone. And now his heart is completely pure and he is ready to go back to the spiritual world. So the purpose of life is purification. We can either be attached to the Lord or we can be attached to Maya. The choice is ours. We have to be attached to something in life. We cannot be in vacuum. We cannot be detached from everything. So the choice is either this or that. A person who has one foot in two boats, both going in the opposite direction, is not in a very stable and happy position, as you can imagine. So one should be firmly having one's feet planted in the boat of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. But for those people whose intelligence, mind, faith and refuge is fixed in the material energy of the Lord, they are destined for not punar avrittim, not a punar avrittim, but punar avrittim. They have to come again and again. When we tell people that please do not commit sins, this is not proper, it is not good to drink, it is not good to kill animals and eat the meat, they say, no problem, we are not concerned. There was a little small story that, short story that Prabhupada said one time. He said one time there was two men had a fight and the other man was more powerful. So he started beating the other man. So So the other man who was getting beaten, he started running for his life. So this other man who was beating, he started chasing him. And as he was chasing, he was taunting the other man, "Why are you running?" So the other man said, "Why should I not run?" In other words, he said, "I'm not running because I'm afraid of you, but why should I not run?" So in this way, people in this world, they are destined for hell, and Prabhupada said they are bravely going to hell. You tell them that you are going to hell, they say, "Yes, we don't mind, we are going." One time when Prabhupada was in an American university, he was talking about punarjanma, life after death, and he explained how as a result of sinful activities, sometimes one may even be born as an animal, one may get the birth of a dog. And then one student stood up and said, "Well, what's wrong?" So Prabhupada said, "Would you like to be a dog?" "So yeah, no problem, I don't mind." So Prabhupada said, "See, they bravely are going to hell, they are bravely going to lower species of life, they don't mind. They don't mind going to hell. They want to increase their stock of sinful reactions. They don't want to reduce. They don't want to act for purification of life. They want to act to increase their entanglement and suffering in life. The process should be kshina kalmashaha, to destroy these sinful reactions." As we see here, this papam, a prarabdha, prarabdha, kutam, bijam, all this has to be destroyed, including from the very root of avidya. When jnana comes, that vidya comes, this whole avidya is uprooted. This whole chart is pulled out from the root. Why? Because avidya itself is pulled out. When the root is pulled out, then all other things also disappear. So vidya, true knowledge in Krishna consciousness, is the only solution. So having explained this, now Lord Krishna will actually give the practical exhibition of this in the life of a self-realized soul. And now in text 18 we come to a very famous verse which you may all kindly try to memorize as your homework.
Vidya Vinaya Sampanne, Brahmane Gavihastini, Shuni Chaiva Shvapake Cha, Pandita Samadarshinaha.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater or an outcast. Kindly repeat. This is the famous Pandita Samadarshinaha verse. Samadarshi. A genuine spiritualist is Samadarshi. He sees everyone equally. But this is also a misunderstood phrase. What does it mean to see everyone equally? One time, one Indian gentleman was a little unhappy with the way Srila Prabhupada was criticizing Mayavadis. Mayavadis means those who do not accept that God is a person. They think that God is ultimately formless, and they also think that we are also God. So because of Prabhupada's criticism, this man protested to Prabhupada and said, "Swamiji, you are an advanced sadhu, so you should be Samadarshi. Why do you criticize other people? You should accept everyone." So Prabhupada said, "That is not our understanding of Samadarshi." He said, "Would you send your child to any school, to any college, to any teacher?" He said, "No, why not? You will be very careful to select which college, which school you want to send your child, because you want to be sure that he receives the best knowledge from the best teacher and the best institution." So similarly, when we receive knowledge, we should receive from the proper source. We have to discriminate. We have to make a distinction. This is good, this is not good. When we go for medical treatment, don't we make a distinction? We say, oh, this doctor has degrees or doesn't have degree. Or we go to anyone who is sitting on the corner with some injection needle, will we go to him? We will not go. We say, oh, this person doesn't look qualified. We make a distinction. So in life, even in everyday matters, we are always making distinction when it comes to receiving something, especially receiving something valuable like knowledge. How much more careful we have to be when receiving spiritual knowledge then. We have to be very discriminating. From whom are we hearing this spiritual knowledge? Is this knowledge coming in the proper parampara, in the proper sampradaya? Or does it reflect the proper siddhanta or the conclusion of the Gita and the other shastras? So Prabhupada said, when receiving spiritual knowledge, we make distinction. We are not samadarshi. We don't see all doctors as the same. The quack and the qualified person, we don't see them as the same. The ignorant person and the wise man, we don't see them as the same. This kind of samadarshi, he said, is foolishness. But Prabhupada said, when it comes to giving this knowledge, then we are samadarshi. We don't discriminate. This person is from low caste, this is high caste, this is Indian, this is American, this is Hindu, he is Muslim. We don't discriminate. This is pure spiritual knowledge. It is meant for all. Those who have a ear to hear, who have a heart to receive this knowledge, they are welcome to come. He said, our temples are open for the whole world. We have no bondage, no restriction that this is meant only for this caste or this community or this nation or this dharma. No, we are for all. So he said, this is our samadarshi. And this is a fact. Samadarshi has to be understood on the spiritual platform. Samadarshi means that a person doesn't make distinctions on the basis of the body. He doesn't say, oh, this is from this community, this person from that community, this person is low, that person is high, this is rich, that is poor, learned, not learned. For the sake of giving Krishna consciousness on a higher spiritual platform, the person sees that ultimately all these living beings are part and parcel of Krishna. They are all spirit souls. And as spirit souls, they are all equal. But according to the different karmas that they have performed in life, they have all received different karma, their different reactions. So therefore, someone has received the body of a tiger, someone has received the body of a rat, someone of a king, and someone of a pauper. So he understands these distinctions, and he behaves differently with all these different people. Even the learned man will not unnecessarily go and shake hands with the tiger, isn't it? So although he understands the tiger also has the Atma, and even my friend has Atma inside his body, but ultimately I can shake hands with my friend, but I cannot shake hands with the tiger. Because at this moment the tiger is in a body where its intelligence is covered. It is not able to understand that he is supposed to shake hands with me, rather he will eat me. So our intelligence, our samadarshi is to keep distance from the tiger. And understanding all the while that ultimately even this tiger is a spirit soul, so I should not unnecessarily kill it also. Even animals, they are also spirit souls, so we should not kill them. In this way, the transcendentalist, the learned person, the real pandita or the wise person actually makes no distinctions on a spiritual platform, although on a material platform he will make distinctions. We see that even in the company of spiritually minded people, we do make distinctions of how we behave with different people, isn't it? If there is a very elevated saint, we behave in one way towards that person. And if there is another person who is like us, who may be a beginner, then we will behave in another way with that person. Both may be respectful, but still there is a difference of degree. So always there is a distinction in terms of practical behavior with different people and different phenomena in this world. But underlying all that, we should have the spiritual understanding that ultimately all are spirit souls, all are engaged in the different bodies according to their past activities. So here we see living beings classified in the three categories. Brahmane, Gavi. Brahmane means a Brahmana, Gavi. Gavi means a cow. So Brahmana and cow both are in Sattvaguna. Among all the human beings, the Brahmana is one who is in Sattvaguna, Kshatriya is one who is in Rajagun, Vaishya is one who is in mixed Raja and Sattva, or I beg your pardon, Raja and Tamo, and the Shudra is one who is in Tamoguna. Similarly, among the animals, animals like the cow, they are in the mode of goodness. Animals like the elephant, as is mentioned here now, next, Gavi, Hastini, so that's in Rajagun. And animals like the dog, or the donkey, the camel, these are animals in Tamoguna. So that is mentioned here, Shuni. Shuni means dog. Or even those who eat the dog, Shvapacha, Shva. Shva is dog. Pacha means to eat. So Chandals. So they are also in the mode of ignorance. So in this way, we see here the three categories, Sattvaguna, Rajaguna, Tamaguna mentioned in this verse. So the Pandit, real learned person, understands this distinction, but still behaves with them in a different way. Today, however, there is no conception of seeing equally. Rather, there is a world of seeing each other as enemy, as competitors. Common language, it is called dog eat dog. It is a world of competition where everybody is trying to pull the other down. You grab another's property, and in the process, you also lose your own. Prabhupada told a small story of this dog who got some food to eat in his mouth, and he was very happy, and his mouth was full, and he was dreaming, I will go into the forest where nobody is seeing and I will have a nice feast. And he was going away towards a solitary place, and he came across a pond on the way. So he came to the edge of the pond and saw his own reflection. But when he saw it, he didn't recognize it to be his own reflection. He thought there's another dog who is carrying some food in his mouth. He said, I want that food. So he opened his mouth to take that food that he saw inside the water. And what happened? Did he get that food? He lost that food, and also he lost what he already had. That also he lost. In other words, in this world, Prabhupada explained, people have lost this equality of vision. They're always seeing each other as friends, as enemies, and therefore they try to grab other people's property or preserve this property, and in the process they not only lose that, they lose their own. A true transcendentalist or spiritualist, however, is content with what his destiny brings him. He is content with spending his life and time for his basic minimum maintenance and trying to find as much time as possible for furthering his spiritual objectives in life, for purification, and for ultimately becoming free from the cycle of birth and death and returning home back to Godhead, to the kingdom of God, the spiritual world, which is the perfection of our life. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, we will have darshan now. It is time for darshan. And then we will have prasadam, question answers, and then prasadam. Hare Krishna.
About basic minimum maintenance, can you throw some light on this? And because, thing is, I mean, ideally, how much a person should earn and spend so that he can keep his life satisfying. So the moment he earns more, he spends more, and his needs go up, and he's never satisfied. So, can you explain on this?
It has to be according to need, not according to greed. what is one person's need may be another person's greed. If someone has a body like Bhima, then he needs to naturally eat more. That is his need. But if someone is like Raghunath Das Goswami, then he needs very little. So it depends on what is our actual need. This is a very subjective word. How do you understand what you need? For this, we need two things: honesty to ourselves, and second, spiritual advancement. When we are honest to ourselves, then we understand, do I really need this? Can I not do without it? Is it a need or is it a greed for me? What is it? So I have to be honest to myself, if not to others. And secondly, the more spiritually advanced one becomes, one understands that actually what appeared to be a necessity earlier is no longer so. I can easily do without it. And then one understands actually what one's needs are. The more one understands one's spiritual needs, the more one's material needs will reduce. Very simple formula. To the extent that we are not aware or we are not fulfilling our spiritual needs, to that extent we will always feel a sense of deficiency in us. When the spiritual need is not fulfilled, there is always a sense of dissatisfaction. You want, you want, you want. And then you keep on acquiring more and more and more material things in the hope that that dissatisfaction will be destroyed. But it is not. Because the basic need is spiritual. And we are trying to satisfy it by acquiring material things. And because that need doesn't get satisfied, we want to acquire more, thinking that maybe by acquiring more, it will get satisfied. But never get satisfied. But we have missed the point. The point is that we are trying to satisfy spiritual needs by material methods. So that will not happen. The moment we, by spiritual understanding, understand that our need is basically spiritual. There is a need of the body, no doubt. But fundamentally, there is a need of the soul. If we pay attention to that sufficiently enough, then automatically, because of the sense of satisfaction that derives from that, our material needs will automatically diminish.
If there is no need for other things.
No, I did not say there is no need for other things.
Which are not helpful for our devotion.
Yes.
Then in this world there are so many things which are discovered and so many things which are to be discovered. Actually, the scientists discover. Actually, the thing is already there. They just find it out. But then in that sense there are infinite things which are unmanifest. So does it mean that they are of no use?
If anything cannot be applied in the service of Lord Krishna, it is of no use. So the question is, are computers of no use? Are spaceships and rockets of no use? If they are not used for Krishna's service, no use. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, we make the best use of a bad bargain. Because it is there, we have not invented, somebody else is inventing for his own reasons, for his sense gratification. So he has invented and the devotees are very intelligent, they just take it and use it for Krishna's service. So effectively, they are engaging, the devotees are engaging the intelligence of the materialistic people in Krishna's service. So using all these things. But at the same time, it is not that without computers, devotees could not survive before. Quite happy. It is not that without electricity and microphone, devotees were not living happily before. They were quite happy. But now that is there, we use it in Krishna's service. But we are not captured by, enslaved by this technology and this modern invention. If it's there, we use it for Krishna's service. If it's not there, we are going to serve anyway. Because technology, science for the devotee is not an instrument for sense gratification. If at all a devotee uses science and technology, it is for service to Krishna. Whereas a materialistic person, his goal of developing science and technology is sense gratification, subtle or gross. Even the scientist who is engaged in so many mathematical theories in his brain is also having some intellectual pleasure out of it. That's also subtle sense gratification. The philosophers, devoid of God consciousness, who concoct all kinds of philosophies and theories, they are also getting some sense gratification at a subtle level. So the principle is, whatever is necessary and useful for Krishna's service, we utilize. The other things we reject, and therefore they are of not any use to us.
One more question. Hare Krishna. Practically in this world, actually in this Kali Yuga, due to this technology and all, practically it is impossible. Out of 100%, only 0.5% you can say who can engage totally in means Krishna service totally. But most of the people, although they may devote, but most of the time they are outside of the world. So they come in contact with different things. So even though outwardly it may seem that they are doing devotion, but their consciousness is on the both minds, as you said, that one boat is going towards material and one is going towards God. So their leg is in both. Outwardly it seems like that. So is it not hard for every person to do that?
The question is it not hard to practice spiritual life living in this world? That's the sum and substance of the question, isn't it? So please tell me, what is easy in this world? Is anything easy? Nothing is easy in this world. Maintaining a family is easy? Very difficult. Keeping a family happy, is it easy? Earning your livelihood, is it easy? Cooking a meal, is it easy? You would rather just do like this and the meal is ready, but you have to cut, you have to do so many things. Nothing is easy in this world. So many things. The question is not whether it is easy or difficult. Question is whether it is right or wrong. The question is whether it is necessary or not necessary. The question is whether it is useful for Krishna's service or not. If it is for our real welfare or not. If something is for our welfare, is for our real good, we should do it regardless of whether it is easy or difficult. The person who is a staunch materialist, he will not hesitate to take pains if he is convinced that he can get some sense gratification somewhere. Isn't it? Isn't the world doing very hard activities? Aren't they all performing very difficult jobs? If you look around in life, you will see they are working day and night. They work so hard because they feel they are going to get some material benefit out of it. So also the devotee understands, yes, this material world is designed for difficulty. Nothing is easy in this world. So we take the easy way because of practicing devotional service. First of all, the devotee's life becomes much easier than others because his baggage is less, his burden on his shoulder is less. And then he performs with whatever situation Krishna has put him in. He renders devotional service to the Lord, and in this way he makes advancement. So we should not be deterred if the practice of Krishna consciousness by staying in the outside world is difficult. It is bound to be. That is why we need regular association of devotees. We need to be very sincere in the practice of our devotional service. And we have to be very careful about following the principles, not being negligent. Then we will be able to make what appears to be difficult easy. All right? Desire, the bijam, is the bijam or the seed of sinful desire. Is that also part of our karma? What do you feel? You can answer the question yourself. The question is the bijam that we discussed in the diagram, the seed of sin, is that also part of karma? Yes, now you can answer by looking at that cycle. It's part of the karma. Because you have done bad karma, pap, you get the aprarabdha, you get the sinful disposition, and because of that, you have the disposition that's a result of your karma. Then the bijam comes as a result of that. So it's a vicious cycle. And only by bhakti, by real knowledge, one can break this vicious cycle. Okay? Hare Krishna.
Before getting hurt from Lord Krishna about Bhagavad Gita, he had won some astras where he could get some powers by chanting some mantras. Somebody had worked on that, you know, to get about this astra. Was their work not correct? They are also like scientists who now are discovering some astras, you know, nuclear weapons and all. Likewise, earlier also by chanting some mantras, one could get some powers. Was their work not correct?
Was their work
not correct?
Not correct. Was the work of those scientists in the past, in the Vedic ages, who by chanting mantras could throw weapons, was their work not correct? That is the question. Now, in reference to an earlier question, similar answer may be given. What is correct and what is not correct? What is the standard of reference? That's all, the Lord's service. Anything that can be used in the Lord's service makes it correct. Arjuna used in the Lord's service, so it was correct. But Duryodhana's use was not correct. So Krishna consciousness is so easy. Not difficult, as we are saying. So easy, the principle is so simple. Our standard of reference is what is beneficial and useful and necessary for Krishna's service. That's all. And by that, we are able to make all decisions. Is there any other question?